Shivas from all the evidence we have, one who had never lost her baptismal innocence. And consequently, we wonder how she could have a practical confidence in God's mercy, since she seemed to have been, well, such an innocent person all her life. How could she trust in God's mercy, having forgiven her the sins she didn't commit? You follow the logic. Well, leave it to the saints. There is mercy and mercy. There is the mercy of forgiveness. There is the mercy of protection. She never doubted that except for God's mercy, there was no sin she might not have committed, or that she was not capable of committing. And it's here, how good this is to hear. She had a deep sense of the sinful urges in human nature, especially the sinful tendency to doubt. Remember in her autobiography how she was assailed with troubles against the faith, remember? In any case, this practical confidence in God's mercy is, of course, achieved, or at least developed, by the reflection on one's own sinfulness and the corresponding gratitude to God and the total assurance that I have been forgiven because God has been so merciful to me. But there is also the practical confidence of not only reflecting on my past sins forgiven, but also on the sins I might commit. I know what tendencies I've got. I know the weakness of my human nature. I know the shrewdness of the devil. I know the seductiveness of the world. And I know nothing but God's mercy can protect me. So that if, as she came to the end of her days, and could glorify God for never having lost his friendship, she never for a moment thought it was because of her strength, but only because of the merciful protection of God. And that because she was so weak, that's why he had wrapped her up. And she used figures of speech that I forget. Remember? She was so helpless. That's why she needed so much assistance. The practical constant awareness, the moment I have an urge that I know is sinful, the moment I experience a temptation that I know I can't cope with, immediately to throw myself into the arms of God. And finally, the church tells us the spiritual childhood has confident recourse to divine providence. The English, by the way, sounds a bit strange, and I had to check it for its accuracy. That's what it says. You might say yourself, now providence is something you believe in. How do you have recourse to divine providence? Well, God's providence, of course, is his loving care. The loving care he has of the universe at large and of each one of us individually. Providence should be balanced on the part of God with prudence on the part of man. St. Therese was, by all standards, a very prudent person. But this recourse to divine providence is, if we can coin the word, the antithesis to trusting in providence, because we can be so prudent as to plan and calculate and measure, especially in the degree to which we give ourselves to God. This is the final feature of the spiritual childhood in analyzing its distinctive qualities. There is, what shall we call it again here, as one who is not a specialist in children, I've got to borrow from other sources, but isn't there a spontaneous generosity about children rushing headlong . That's what this confident recourse to divine providence means, rushing headlong in the service of God, and frankly not giving a second thought to what's going to happen to me. Will I make mistakes? Maybe I will. But, as she said more than once, God actually accepts even the mistakes we make. He is so pleased with the generosity in the making of the mistakes. Nothing escapes the loving providence of God. The secret is that what we do, even the mistakes we perpetrate, that we have done out of love. Now, the paradox which this implies. On the one hand, we assume that as a person grows physically and intellectually, well, they become more mature in their life of sanctity and union with God. Are we talking about some kind of reversion to childhood? What are we talking about? Well, as we have in our notes, spiritual maturity means returning to the virtues of spiritual childhood. Did we say this somewhere before we got too deep into our subject, that we're talking here in analogous language, that just as there are all the mysteries of the faith made more intelligible by comparing them with things of the natural order, so childhood, which is a natural state through which all of us pass, remains, however, an analog or a model. That natural state of childhood remains a model of the way we should remain, or better, the way we should develop. Even as we mature in our own minds, that we never grow too smart for God. And unless we struggle, even as we grow in all the maturity that in the nature of things we are to develop, we are to constantly work at cultivating the littleness that is associated with childhood. The source of its wisdom, the Church tells us, is God's grace, especially His revelation. little ones are clearly not chronological children. We are little insofar as before God we recognize our own smallness, in fact, as we shall see in a moment, our own nothingness. Each of these is a quotation from her writings, her letters, her autobiography. We recognize our own nothingness. The operative word in that sentence is the verb recognize. Objectively and actually, we are nothing of ourselves. And except for God, that's just what we would be. We know that. Because 9 months before we were born, we weren't. And what was nothing remains of itself, well, nothing. Ah, but the secret is to recognize that fact. That, by the way, is the main reason that God provides so many opportunities for our humiliation. You know, of course, that the word humility comes from the Latin humilitas, and humilitas itself comes from humus. Now, we've now given it a certain amount of respectability, this being springtime. What's humus? It's good, rich, black dirt. Well, among the Romans, it wasn't good or rich. It was just plain dirt. And indeed, it was the dirt on which we walk. God provides so many chances, if only we are willing to accept them, for keeping us down where we belong. Second, we expect everything from the goodness of God, exactly as a little child. Children have dreams that I'm told nobody else has. God is good. I love him. I want something. He'll give it. Is that the logic of a child? And of course, on occasion, and more than once, no doubt, the child will have to be disappointed. He loves the parents. I did tell you, didn't I, about the father who bought his young 6-year-old boy a toy plane with a motor in it. The father was driving me to wherever I was going, and he was telling me this with sadness. Father, it cost me $37.95. The boy wanted it. I shouldn't have done it. But, well, he didn't have to tell me more. The boy asked for it. He brought it home. I don't know what the wife said. So they launched the plane on its maiden flight. The motor had to be somehow arranged and calculated, fly into the air and remain for a certain time, and then, according to instructions, it would land. The plane went up. It didn't land. It crashed. One flight, no plane. God wants to teach us something from the infinite expectancy of a child. Third feature. Practice the little virtues. It all depends, I guess, on what books you read. Read the life of a Joan of Arc? You want to liberate. And the United States sure needs a Joan of Arc. The little virtues, well, all those little things that, unless a person keeps a very shrewd eye, you won't even know it's an opportunity for a virtue. The crossword, somebody showing up late, or worse, somebody shows up before you do. In a given day, with the right perspective, I dare say there can be 100 such opportunities, little things, that are opportunities for the practice of virtue, or the momentary prayer that I offer. Number four, all saints owe so much to each other. What she really meant was, they owe just about everything to one another. That's why, as I've said more than once in the course of this course, that we should, as often as we can, be in the company of saints. Now, we'd like to think that, say, the people we live in qualify, but sometimes, well, our charity has to be strained to call the people we live with saints. Hence the importance of reading about the saints. Have you noticed, by the way, as we're finishing this course, what another title for this course could have been? A Course in the Virtues of the Saints. I thought I would save this for the last class. I hope they've taught us something, haven't they? And there's much more there. So it's both in the area of knowledge. They teach us so much, not only about how to serve God, but what joy there is in serving God. But I suppose, for me at least, one of the most satisfying features of reading and studying and trying to imitate the lives of the saints is the fact that it can be done. Sanctity, by the way, once you're convinced of this, you've got it made. Sanctity is not impossible. Yeah. The lowest place is the only spot on earth not open to envy. That, by the way, would make a good proverb for any collection, right? Now, this is not calculated, you might say, worldly wisdom, that I'll protect myself from being envied by, well, looking at the ground and walking like, well, I am the worm of this earth. It's not a Uriah Heep type of promotion of humility. You know who Uriah Heep was? Uriah Heep was, he was a gentleman, wasn't he?
Very humble.
Very humble. And everybody knew it. There is profound saintly wisdom behind this, however, because And in this I speak as a novice. All I can tell you, though, is in dealing with people, if you want to cultivate the practice of charity, especially to have other people love you, be sure, be very sure, you give them no cause to envy you. You know what I'm saying? If you have gifts, if you have qualities, whatever you've got, in God's name, hide them. Does that make sense? Because you can lose your dearest friend if that person begins to envy. Sixth, I have not tried to seek myself in anything. What a statement to make. And we can assume it was an honest one. And as we know, we can even in the practice of charity be seeking ourselves, right? When I see these bronze plaques, and some I've been in churches where they must have had, I don't want to exaggerate, but see 100 bronze plaques all over every station of the 14 station who donated it. I've been in pews where they have the pews, each identified who gave the pew. Now, don't misunderstand me. There is a sense of gratitude to our benefactors that should be manifest by our, well, proudly displaying or generously exhibiting their, well, benefaction. All I know is that a lot of people practice such virtue as they do, but with at least half an eye to human approval and praise for what they're doing. And when Christ compares the publican, remember, and the Pharisee, he was speaking to all of us. This too is part of childhood. From again what I understand, children do the most spontaneous things, can be embarrassing to them and their parents. They are not, if they are genuine children, am I correct, victims of human respect? Sometimes you wish they had more of it. Consider yourself as a little slave whom everyone has a right to command. Oh, speaking to mainly religious. What a paradise on earth religious communities would be if we honestly believe this, that I'm a little slave whom everyone has a right to command. Everyone, that's right. Or as Ignatius tells us, to consider everybody your superior. Even though you know perfectly well, like for example, my provincial here in Chicago, my former student. I know him as a student. Yet, the relationship that we are told to cultivate in our dealings with others is that provided somehow God uses these people, they are spokesmen for His will. As far as I'm concerned, no matter how superior I may be in everything else, in this one thing, I am inferior. That person, I repeat, my inferior in everything, has a right to tell me what to do. And finally, it is so sweet to serve God in the dark nights. we have but this life to live by faith. Or you might say, thank God for faith. Where we don't understand, we don't see, we trust. We are led by the hand. This is my definition of this life. We are led by the hand through the darkness of this life, trusting that the one who is leading us knows where he is going and would never mislead one who trusts him. But that too is the picture of a child.
This concludes Father Hardin's lecture on Saint Teresa.